sign
for
of
Kabbalah.
His disagreement.
Yes.
To, yeah.
But,
so
okay.
Since he found actually that he found that the people's acceptance can be actually in the Kufa, he started moving towards there, and he left, and he found even look when the Islam. The expediency of Islamic Ummah is even more important than the rituals and worships. That's why he leaves his Hajj incomplete. And look, this is the Imam, this is an Islamic leader that knows that the expediency of Islamic Ummah obliges him to leave his Hajj incomplete. While you can find no one that is permitted to leave his Hajj incomplete. So he moves towards Kufa, and on the way, on his way in Karbala, actually, he was martyred by in a sad and really tragic event by the troops of Yazid and with his representative in Kufa, that is Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad.
That's right.
So Imam was martyred in a really tragic way. He and his family and his 72 loyal companions. And his family were arrested and were sent to Shaman.
That's right.
The whole story that some...
Okay, Dr. Fahd Rouhani, let's get to the post-event. The Kabbalah tragedy is so harsh and tragic that all the details cannot be mentioned over here. Sorry for, as they say, it includes graphic video.
Mm.
It includes graphic events over here. We cannot say what atrocity did Yazid, Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, Shamr ibn Zuljushan and the other agents of Yazidi toward the companions of Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the women and the children. But the case is that after the captives are taken to the Yazid's court, the heads are over there. He starts drinking liquor, and putting trays of chess, playing chess on the heads of the Ahlul Bayt, and drinking liquor. He was himself criticized by the people around him, his viziers and the ministers around him, but he continues doing such behaviors from a guy like Yazid and the cruelty that he did towards Ahlul Bayt. What was the main reason for Yazid to show such vengeance toward Ahlul Bayt, not acting mercifully even to their bodies and their heads?
Yeah, the point is simply that he wanted to take revenge, and he wanted to silence all others and show that, okay, look, he was the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, okay, and I ordered him to be beheaded,
yeah,
and his body to be, I mean,
mutilated, yes,
okay, trampled, okay?
Mutilated,
yes. And then, first of all, Yazid wanted to show that he was the absolute power over there, and wanted to silence all others. We find that, I mean, the reign of terror in the Umayyad period continued, I mean, from the time of Muawiyah up to the end of the period of Yazid, okay? And after Yazid, we find that Marwanids got to power. Okay. However, we find that Yazid's main power was Yazid's main intention was, not only to silence all his opponents, but to cut off the line of the Ahlul Bayt. Okay, but it was just a vain hope. I mean, it was a foolish hope.
That's right.
Because Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, okay, was a survivor of the Ashura tragedy. Okay. Now we find that, even some historians who were courtiers, either in the time of the Umayyads or in the time of the Abbasids, when they come to Yazid ibn Muawiyah, they cannot resist, this feeling, okay, to write down, what realities took place over there. Although they were, courtiers, and they were paid by the government, in order to write the history in favor of the Umayyads and favor of the Abbasids. In some places, they reveal some of the secrets, that took place, that were used to be, that were used to take place inside the Umayyad courts. Okay?
Although doing curse or doing land towards the companions and the caliphs of the Muslim lands are considered as forbidden by some of our Sunni brethren, but according to authentic resources like Ahmad ibn Hanbal al-Zahabi, Ibn Ibad, Ibn Imad Hanbali, Ibn Jawzi, and Ibn al-Khaldun, you know, cursing Yazid ibn Muawiyah according to a consensus was done. And see how much a person could be corrupted and how much a scandal who could make during the Muslim moment.
May I have a short comment? Knowing about the reasons of this actually oppression that he made towards the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam requires to study about the characteristics of the characteristics and features of the government which was introduced by Muawiyah and after him from Yazid, and actually they were the bases of this Umayyad dynasty. I mean, in the sense that they reached to power officially, and I think it requires to see how they started to expand corruption, cruelty, and also eliminating the Islamic values like piety and ruling unpious people over the others and choosing people to lead as the governors and commanders of the people, those who did not really actually have the qualifications to be selected as these for these positions. These are, I think, requires to talk about in depth and details, inshallah, in upcoming sessions.
Let me finish this program with a couplet from the famous Persian poet Sanai Ghaznavi. I read it in Persian and translated it into English. داستان پسر هند مگر نشنیدی که از او بر سر اولاد پیامبر چه رسید. Haven't you heard the story of the son of Hind, the wife of Abu Sufyan, that what he did do to the descendants of Prophet Muhammad? پدر او لب و دندان پیامبر بشکست. His father has broken the mouth, the jaws, and the tooth of Prophet Muhammad. مادر او جگر عم پیامبر بمکید.
Hamza
Sayyid al-Shuhada is referring to the uncle of Prophet Muhammad. خود به ناحق حق داماد پیامبر بگرفت. Imam Ali alayhi salam was in fact neglected of his right, that is the right of successorship as imamate. پسر او سر فرزند پیامبر ببرید. He is referring to Yazid, cutting off the head of the Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. And this is the last line. بر چنین قوم چرا لعنت و نفرین نکنم؟ Why am I not accursing and cursing such a tribe? لعن الله یزید و علی آل یزید. May curse be upon Yazid and the descendants of Yazid ibn Muawiyah. This was a couplet done by Sanai Ghaznavi, the famous Persian poet. Really beautiful. And it has all the history from pre-Islamic period, from Abu Sufyan, the father of Muawiyah, up until Yazid ibn Muawiyah. May Allah curse them all. Thank you very much, Dr. Fakhwani and Brother Ali Alavian.
Thanks to you, brother,
for your presence in the program Viewpoints. It was very kind of you. May Allah accept all of our mournings and azadaris and this majalis that we do for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, the man who said no to the oppression of Yazid ibn Muawiyah and wanted to revive the pure Muhammadan Islam. For more information on this program, visit our website, parstoday.com/Yankalav Islam page. Do not forget us in these supplications and the morning ceremonies and the rallies and demonstrations for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam during the months of Muharram all across the world. Take care, the pandemic is killing, but held your ceremonies for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam, even if it is online. Brothers, do not forget that these sha'ir and the rituals has to be enlivened, even if they are digital and online. Do your marasim and majalis and takaya for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. May Allah bless you all. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum, ya Abu Abdullah al-Hussein.
Look, ya Zahra.
Look, ya Zahra.
Look, ya Zahra.
When the night fell on that desert camping, a lonely voice was heard in mourning. Then she looked and saw someone approaching, one who would join her in her grieving. She had come to see her progeny and what had become of their destiny. But she could not let her to go closer. She did not want her to really see. I do not want you to go further. You will only see pain and horror. Body with no head, 72 dead. Zainab said, do not look yet.
Round the World with Reporters.
In a press conference, Palestinian resistance groups in the Gaza Strip declared the return of nighttime protests, also known as night confusion operations, along the buffer zone to reject the Israeli blockade on the enclave.
It is time to end this crippling siege completely. We gave the mediators many chances to end this siege, and there are no more chances for any delay. Our people have got enough of the suffering. We will not leave our positions and won't stop the confrontation until Israel ends the blockade. Israeli settlers nearby won't witness peace as long as our people are not living in peace. We won't stay silent over the misery our people live in.
Palestinian protesters staged a demonstration near the buffer zone, burning tires and launching incendiary balloons at the Israeli army. The demonstrators were voicing their anger at the deteriorating quality of life in the Gaza Strip, caused by a crippling Israeli blockade since 2007. On Saturday, 13-year-old Omar Hassan Abu Nil died of injuries after being shot by the Israeli soldiers during an anti-Israeli protest held a week before.
If the Israeli regime keeps committing these crimes against our people, we will continue the fight and confront the regime here. Israel should know that we are only fighting for our right to live a decent life. This is our land, and we won't leave it, no matter the cost.
Palestinian Resistance Front says it will escalate clashes with Israel as long as the regime keeps its suffocating siege on Gaza, hampering life in the impoverished enclave. Ruba Shabet, Gaza.
State security forces on standby in Washington, D.C. were activated today as Palestinians marched toward the White House to condemn the first meeting between U.S. President Joe Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett. That summit was ultimately postponed after a series of bombing attacks in Afghanistan, but protesters were quickly driven out of Lafayette Park regardless. They denounced not just the heavy-handed police tactics, but also President Biden's decision to host Bennett and his refusal to hold Israel accountable for its crimes against Palestinian people.
You're really violating our constitutional rights. To express ourselves in front of the administration, to the administration, and you're just using your power to ask us to.
Let us say that we're here to condemn this visit by this war criminal, the new Israeli Prime Minister, Bennett. He's calling for a war with Iran. He wants a new war against the Gaza Strip. He's not here with a proposal to give the Palestinians their rights.
In a symbolic move, the protesters made their way to the Willard Hotel, where the Israeli Prime Minister is staying, and read aloud the names and ages of Palestinians recently killed by the regime. With Israel stepping up its economic and military siege on the Gaza Strip once again, activists all over the world have renewed their efforts to mobilize for Palestinian liberation. But many say it's right here in D.C. that Israel's real base of power lies.
The police aren't letting demonstrators anywhere near the White House.
They are keeping Palestinians and their supporters at least two blocks away, but that has not kept organizers from staying on the move. They say they won't stop until the Biden administration stops being complicit in Israeli war crimes. Wyatt Reed, Washington.
The holiday season has ended, but the protests against the mandatory health pass are continuing. Only in Paris, three different marches took place, dozens all over France. The health pass is an electronic document that people have to show before entering public places. Medical figures show that in areas with more than 70% of people vaccinated, the transmission of the virus and the death qualities are very low. But many people continue to protest because they do not trust the government discourse.
I absolutely don't believe in what they say. We are facing dishonest people, liars. These people want to suppress our liberties and control us.
For me, there is something fishy going on here. I do not have any trust in this vaccine.
But medical figures seem to show the opposite. Today, end of August, 65% of the French population has received two jabs of the anti-COVID vaccine. The French health minister, Olivier Véran, himself a neurologist, administered an injection in front of the cameras. He said that people should fear the virus, not the vaccine. French officials say that the COVID crisis is getting under control thanks to the accelerated vaccination campaign and some mandatory measures. In French overseas territories, however, like Martinique, La Réunion or Guadeloupe, the situation is getting out of control because less than 30% of the people there are vaccinated. COVID infections and death casualties are high. Hospitals are full and the lockdown and curfew have been extended. Today, more than 90% of people who arrive in hospitals with severe symptoms of the COVID virus or who die from the virus are non-vaccinated persons. But the mistrust in the vaccine remains high.
Why do they force me to be injected with an unknown product, a pseudo-experimental vaccine? Normally, a vaccine is first tested on animals, then on volunteers. Today, the government threatens and blackmails an entire population. Restaurant workers and health personnel can be fired.
Hospital workers are now obliged to be vaccinated or have to show a negative PCR test. If not, they will be suspended without salary. Most of the protesters do not deny that the vaccination campaign in France seems to be successful, but they would like the French government to use the method of persuasion rather than restriction. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
A scene of desperation transformed into one of horror in the waning days of the U.S.-led occupation. Two terrorist attacks on Kabul airport. Claimed by Daesh. Dozens killed, among them children and U.S. troops. Hundreds more injured. British troops were spared this time. The U.K. Prime Minister says he's sticking to the evacuation plans.
The military, the Foreign Office teams, the Home Office, the Border Force teams are there, getting people through as fast as they can still. And we're going to keep going up until the last moment.
That last moment comes on August 31st. Thousands, including British troops and eligible Afghans, are yet to be evacuated, and the threat of more attacks is looming. Pressure on the government over its handling of the crisis is mounting.
The Foreign Secretary shouts now, but he stayed on holiday while our mission in Afghanistan was disintegrating. You cannot coordinate an international response from the beach.
It's a shambolic end to a 20-year-long U.S.-led occupation. Leaving ordinary Afghans to fend for themselves in a country torn by decades of war.
They invaded on a pretext, which was a false pretext, and then for 20 years they've spent $2 to $3 trillion destroying that country. The future in that regard is tough for the Afghani people. They're starting from a very low base as one of the poorest countries on earth, but there are resourceful, ingenious people who are well capable of lifting themselves out of their current situation.
The UK followed the US and their NATO allies into Afghanistan in 2001, purportedly to topple the Taliban, only to hand the country back to the militant group two decades later.
Imperialism invades for reasons of extraction of material wealth, to dominate markets, to dominate labor, to dominate resources. They had a geostrategic policy to dominate the oil of that region, Forget their talk about green energy. They want to extract the maximum fossil fuels from the Middle East and dominate every government, any government which stands in their way and is non-compliant.
The Kabul airport attacks will probably not be the last ones. A taste of what to expect in post-occupation Afghanistan.
Experts say what's happening in Afghanistan right now is another crisis created by an illegal war waged by the U.S., the U.K., and other NATO countries. Another example that military invasion or intervention is not conducive to stability or lasting peace. Saeed Pariza, London.
Turkey still seems to be undecided over the issue of the Kabul airport. The Turkish president said Ankara is still yet to decide on a request by the Taliban to run the airport. This came in a presser held in Atatürk Airport ahead of a trip the president is taking to Sarajevo. After Turkey's decision to withdraw troops located at the Kabul airport, the Taliban asked Turkey's assistance in operating the airport. Ankara says it isn't against the idea. However, there are certain things that the Taliban should provide first, such as securing the airport, especially after the latest bombing that took place on Thursday.
The Taliban have made a request regarding the operation of Kabul airport. They say we'll ensure security and you can operate it. But we have not made a decision yet because there's always the possibility of death and such things there.
Turkish president said the hesitation is due to several factors. The main one is the current power vacuum, assuring that a decision will be made once a new government is formed and security is prevailed in Afghanistan. He added that commercial flights to Kabul will not be resumed now. Turkey urged the Taliban earlier to form an inclusive government, which includes former Afghan leaders. Ankara said those politicians have a certain credibility internationally and would help in ensuring political stability.
Turkey is currently working to evacuate its citizens from Afghanistan. However, it seems that Ankara plans to accept Taliban's offer to run the airport, assuring that it is very important to keep the airport functioning to help receive aid supplies. Rahşan Saglam, Istanbul.
The Italian government is considering further expanding its Green Pass scheme, which is part of a plan that aims to have 80% of its citizens vaccinated against the pandemic by the end of September. Despite a significant recent slowdown in the vaccination rate, about 60% of the population has received both doses of COVID-19 vaccine in Italy so far. The government is now considering making it a requirement for employees to show proof of vaccination, testing or recovery at workplaces, including public offices and supermarkets.
La Sicilia, al primo, all'ultimo...
Mind you, the Sicily region, which has the lowest number of vaccinated people, could soon be classified as a high-risk red zone. The vast majority of those in intensive care units these days have not been vaccinated, and the Green Pass scheme serves the purpose of changing their mind.
Italy's Prime Minister Mario Draghi has repeatedly said that the use of the Green Pass scheme is the only alternative to a new lockdown. However, a conspicuous number of Italians are opposing the government's anti-COVID rules that they say infringe on their civil liberties.
Many in Italy are not willing to get vaccinated and are against the mandatory anti-COVID Green Pass. Earlier this month, protests were held in several Italian cities against the introduction of new measures requiring proof of vaccination.
L'essere umano è così, non siamo mai tutti.
That's how people are made. We cannot agree on everything, but the vaccine and the Green Pass is the way to go.
Basta queste scuse.
Enough with excuses. We are not kids. Maybe our authorities should be more severe with those who refuse to get vaccinated.
Since August 6, the Green Pass has been required in order to enter cultural and leisure venues across Italy. From September the 1st, the pass will also be a requirement for all teachers and other school staff. However, the National Association of Head Teachers warned on Wednesday that schools are not equipped to check all the students' vaccine passports. Max Civili, Rome.
Representative of the World Health Organization to the Islamic Republic of Iran, Dr. Jafar Hussain, has visited one of the main vaccination centers in capital Tehran to closely monitor the process of vaccination. In a country where the Delta variant of the coronavirus is killing almost 700 people on a daily basis. During his visit, he learned about different phases of the process, both before and after the vaccination. The WHO representative said that despite sanctions and economic problems, Iran is among countries which has already paid for vaccines from COVAX, but the delivery of the vaccines has been delayed for different reasons.
Iran is a country which has paid already for 16.8 million doses from COVAX, already paid with all the economic sanctions, everything it is facing. The problem is that because of the major outbreaks in other part of the world, like India, like Brazil and other, the vaccine availability globally reduced. What our Director General is recommending to every country head of the state, that it is a whole of society, whole of government approach to control COVID. Not only government can do it, not only WHO can do it, not only other UN, not only private, everybody has to join hand.
The number of outpatients with COVID-19 has decreased by almost 2% this week. We anticipate that the number of hospitalizations will even come down next week.
Iran's death toll from COVID-19 has exceeded 100,000. The rapid rise in COVID-19 cases and deaths in the past weeks has prompted Iranian officials to make utmost efforts to import more vaccines and accelerate the vaccination pace.
According to official reports, almost 10% of the Iranian population have already received two jabs of the COVID-19 vaccines. Experts say the pace is too slow. Accordingly, the new Iranian government has vowed to take all necessary measures to accelerate the vaccination pace and manage the pandemic as soon as possible. Salman Kujuri, Tehran.
In its latest saber-rattling against Iran, Israel has said it may have to resort to military action against the Islamic Republic. Israeli Minister of Military Affairs Benny Gantz made the threat, accusing Iran of seeking to build a nuclear weapon. He said military action must be considered as a plan B to prevent Iran from accessing the materials for a nuke. Meanwhile, the chief of the staff of the Israeli military made a similar threat, saying the regime is speeding up its, quote, operational plans against Iran. He also noted that Israel has recently approved a military budget to expand its capabilities against the Islamic Republic. Israel's blatant confessions of its warmongering policies come as it points to recent increases in uranium enrichment as evidence that Iran is racing toward producing a bomb. Israel has been alleging that Iran is trying to build nuclear weapons since the 1980s, but it has failed to produce any evidence to support its claims.
Israeli aggression and attack against the Islamic Republic of Iran will be a matter of the existence of the Zionist entity. They are trying to bother from one time to time by cyber, digital, electronic warfare, but Iran is proven its capability of equality and competition among superpowers in this field.
Iran, on the other hand, has pledged that any aggression against it will be met with a decisive response regardless of where it comes from.
No one in Iran takes this seriously. The Israeli regime has just ended a major catastrophic loss in its conflict with the Palestinian people. So when the Israelis cannot defeat a Palestinian people who are surrounded in a concentration camp called Gaza, then the Israeli regime is in no position to talk about military confrontation with Iran.
Moreover, Iranian officials have on many occasions stressed that Tehran does not want a war, but that Iran will give a crushing response to aggressors. Israel says it wants to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear arms, while Tel Aviv remains the only possessor of nuclear weapons in the region. In 2008, former U.S. President Jimmy Carter said Israel holds at least 150 nuclear weapons. It was the first time a U.S. president publicly acknowledged Israel's atomic arsenal. We'll be right back.
suicide bombers set off two blasts in Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, on Thursday. The bombings took place outside Hamid Karzai International Airport as thousands were awaiting evacuations following the Taliban takeover of Kabul. Casualties included Afghan civilians and American forces. The U.S. troops suffered their heaviest casualty toll in a single incident in Afghanistan since 2011. In response, President Joe Biden promised punishment for the perpetrators. Biden, under enormous pressure over his administration's handling of the Afghan crisis, said the airlift would continue.
We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay. We will not be deterred by terrorists. We will not let them stop our mission. We will continue the evacuation.
More than 100,000 people have been flown out of Afghanistan since the Taliban swept into power on August 15. The Taliban had allowed the U.S.-led forces to conduct the airlift while planning to finalize their own government as soon as the American troops left. U.S. forces are racing to complete their withdrawal from Afghanistan by an August 31 deadline set by President Biden. His administration is facing growing criticism over the situation in Afghanistan and what is seen as a hasty withdrawal after two decades of military presence. Biden, however, says the U.S. has long ago achieved its original rationale for invading Afghanistan in 2001, to root out al-Qaeda militants and prevent a repeat of the September 11 attacks on the United States. Analysts believe the U.S. has failed to achieve any of its objectives.
Despite spending $200 million per day over the past 20 years, accumulating well in excess of some $2-3 trillion of U.S. taxpayer money, despite sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. troops, our youth, our sisters and brothers who are now traumatized, some lost life and limb, U.S. imperialism has very clearly lost. They've been kicked out by an indigenous resistance.
The U.S. invaded Afghanistan with the stated goal of toppling the Taliban and improving security there. 20 years on, nothing has changed on the ground except the death of tens of thousands of innocent civilians. That, along with the current chaotic pullout, has more than ever raised questions on Washington's real intention about this Afghanistan operation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. Please accept our condolences on the arrival of the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Panahian. Please stay tuned.
شاهد و ناظر بیرونی معتقدم تمام این عزاداران
I as an outside witness and observer believe that most of the people that mourn for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam today were ready to sacrifice their lives for him if they were present in Karbala. Now guess how many people are the mourners for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam and what the total number of the helpers of the Imam would be. The number would be great, and for sure, more than 1 million people.
Karbala! As I step onto your sand, you capture my eyes. Karbala! Karbala!
I see heaven has been placed here beneath your skies.
بچه های امام زمان نمیان چون که دنبال 313 نفر بوده.
Now, the main question is, with all these helpers, why doesn't Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallah ta'ala faraja, reappear? He is looking for 313 people. The answer is that Imam al-Mahdi's mission is not like that of Imam al-Husayn, alayhi salam, in Karbala. How do you understand this? When a person is going to be martyred, he will be corrected automatically. Imam Mahdi, ajalallah ta'ala farajahu sharif, wants to govern. We must be pure in Imam Mahdi's government, exactly like the companions of Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam in the tragedy of Karbala. We must pay attention to this point, that being pure and staying pure while having power is very difficult. This is because fame and money can deviate us from the right path. Therefore, Imam al-Mahdi, ajalallah ta'ala faraja, needs companions who are pure, like the companions of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam.
Karbala, why do you hold such memories? Ashura,
thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Panahian. To find out more about this program, log on to our website www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care, and Assalamu alaik, Ya Aba Abdullah al-Husayn.
Are beginning, the season's tears are flowing. Our iman we are condoling. Our new year starts with morning. Muharram is a beginning, the season's tears are flowing. Our imam we are condoling. Karbala, what precious blood was spilled there? Ashura, Al-Husayn was murdered here. Ashura.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz, every day from 15:20 to 16:20 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave, 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 19:20 to 20:20 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5 and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight. The unexpected and unwelcome coronavirus surge now unfolding in the United States has hit hardest in states that were slow to embrace vaccines. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Patricia Mazai, Benjamin Muller, and Robert Gabaloff. The piece is titled, What Went Wrong with the Pandemic in Florida? Stay with us for more. Unexpected and unwelcome coronavirus surge now unfolding in the United States has hit hardest in states that were slow to embrace vaccines. And then there is Florida. While leaders in that state also refused lockdowns and mask orders, they made it a priority to vaccinate vulnerable older people. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a Republican, opened mass vaccination sites and sent teams to retirement communities and nursing homes. Younger people also lined up for vaccine shots. Governor Ron DeSantis and public health experts expected a rise in cases this summer as people gathered indoors in the air conditioning. But what happened was much worse. Cases spiraled out of control, reaching peaks higher than Florida had seen before. Hospitalizations followed, so did deaths, which are considerably higher than the numbers currently reached anywhere else in the United States. It's a very sad moment for all of us, said Natalie E. Dean, a biostatistician at Emory University who until recently worked at the University of Florida and has closely followed the pandemic in the state. It was really hard to imagine us ever getting back to this place. The Florida story is a cautionary tale for dealing with the current incarnation of the coronavirus. The United States has used the vaccines as its primary pandemic weapon, but Florida shows that even a state that made a major push for vaccinations, Florida ranks 21st among states and Washington, D.C., in giving people of all ages at least one vaccine shot, can be crushed by the Delta variant, reaching frightening levels of hospitalizations and deaths. Clearly, the vaccines are keeping most of these people out of the hospital, but we're not building the herd immunity that people hoped, Ron DeSantis said at a news conference this past week. You've got a huge percentage of people, adults, that have gotten vaccine shots, and yet you've still seen a wave. Morgues and crematoriums are full or getting there. Public utilities in Orlando and Tampa have asked residents to cut back on water usage so liquid oxygen, which is used in water treatment, can be conserved for hospitals. As of Friday, 27th of August, Florida was recording an average of 242 virus deaths a day, nearly as many as California and Texas combined, though a few states still had a higher per capita rate, according to public health data tracked by the New York Times. Florida. Florida's pandemic data more scant since the state ended its declared COVID-19 state of emergency in June reveals only limited information about who is dying. Hospitals have said upward of 90% of their patients have been unvaccinated. Exactly why the state has been so hard hit remains an elusive question. Other states with comparable vaccine coverage have a small fraction of Florida's hospitalization rate. The best explanation of what has happened is that Florida's vaccination rates were good, but not good enough for its demographics. It has so many older people that even vaccinating a vast majority of them left more than 800,000 unprotected. Vaccination rates among younger people were uneven, so clusters of people remained at risk. Previous virus waves, which were milder than in some other states, conferred only some natural immunity. And Florida is Florida. People have enjoyed many months of party going and traveling, all activities conducive to swift virus spread. Unlike in places like Oregon, which is clamping down again, adopting even outdoor mask mandates, Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, continues to stay the course, hoping to power through despite the devastating human toll. A Quinnipiac University opinion poll released this past week found that Ron DeSantis' approval rating was 47%. He and other Florida state officials have sought to steer away from measures that could curtail infections, banning strict mask mandates in public schools. The biggest school districts imposed them anyway, and on Friday, a state judge ruled that Florida could not prevent those mandates, a decision the Department of Education plans to appeal. Florida has experienced more deaths than normal, from all causes, not just COVID-19, throughout the pandemic. In the early weeks of 2021, with cases surging and the vaccine rollout kicking off, the state averaged 5,600 deaths each week, about a third more than typical for that time of the year, according to mortality figures from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. The deaths dropped and then went back up again. These excess deaths are important, both because a number of COVID-19 deaths occur outside of hospitals and because the virus may contribute to deaths from other causes as a result of the strain on the healthcare system. In the first week of August, the state recorded another 5,600 deaths. But because mortality rates normally drop during summer months, the figure was more than 50% above what's typical. "We're seeing a ton of people calling us to report the COVID deaths," said Dr. Stephen J. Nelson, the Polk County medical examiner. "They're typically young people that have been sick for a while. The picture of who is dying, however, is complicated. About 82% of people 65 and older in the state are fully vaccinated, about average for the nation. That has still left a relatively large number of older people, about 819,000, unvaccinated or only partially vaccinated," said Jason Salemi, an epidemiologist at the University of South Florida. "If the unvaccinated also take fewer other precautions," he added, "that would put them directly in the virus's path." "The Delta variant is exceptional at finding vulnerable populations," he said. "The situation in nursing homes, where infections can spread swiftly, has also been problematic. While vaccination rates among older Floridans as a whole have been good, the rate of nursing home residents who are fully vaccinated, an average of 73.1% in each home, is lower than every state but Nevada, according to the CDC. About 47.5% of nursing home staff members were fully vaccinated as of 15th of August, the lowest of any state but Louisiana. Older people are also more likely to have immune deficiencies and comorbidities, making them more susceptible to breakthrough infections and hospitalizations, noted Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease specialist at the University of California, San Francisco. And some, though not all, data have suggested that immunity against infection has waned in older vaccinated adults. The Biden administration has indicated that those people will be among the first in line for booster vaccine shots. Then there are the younger people who now make up a larger share of Florida virus deaths. Before 25th of June, people under the age of 65 made up 22% of deaths. Since then, that proportion has risen to 28%. 56% of people between the ages of 12 and 64 in Florida's 10 largest counties are fully vaccinated, which is consistent with national figures. But in the rest of the state, that figure is only 43%, and in 27 counties, less than 1 in 3 residents in the age group is fully vaccinated. The heart-wrenching deaths of children remain rare. The deaths of young and middle-aged adults have become routine. "My mom had no prior illnesses. She was strong as an ox," said Trey Burrows, whose 50-year-old mother, Cindy Dawkins, died from COVID-19 on 7th of August. "There was literally nothing wrong with her. This just came out of nowhere." Ms. Dawkins, a mother of four who worked in a restaurant in Boynton Beach, Florida, began to feel ill shortly before her birthday, as the family was en route to celebrate in Orlando. Ms. Dawkins developed a cough and shortness of breath. 4 days later, she went to hospital. Doctors placed her on a ventilator. 32 hours later, she was dead. Her son said she had not gotten vaccinated because she feared possible side effects. Those who did not get vaccinated are only part of the explanation behind the surge. Many states slammed by the virus earlier developed deep reservoirs of natural immunity from prior infections, affording them higher levels of protection than would be evident from vaccination rates alone.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, spirituality as medicine. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. I am Sayyid Muhammad Reza. Today, I am going to talk about another approach to spirituality. One approach is spirituality as combat with the self. Another approach is spirituality as medicine. So, this is one way the Quran treated the process of self-development and described man's effort and struggle to achieve piety and spirituality. Spirituality as a medicine. Our problems, our spiritual problems, are described as sickness, and we need to treat them. We need to cure them, to heal them. Like our bodies, our souls become sick. And unfortunately, the worst type of sickness is the sickness that is related to our souls, not our body. In 12 verses of the Holy Quran, some of the people are described as people who are suffering from the illness that they have inside their heart. And this sickness become worse by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Because the people who have this sickness, they don't want to be cured. And they insist on their sickness. فِي قُلُوبِهِمْ مَرَضٌ فَزَادَهُمُ اللَّهُ مَرَضًا. In contrary, there are a group of people who have a healthy, sound, and pure heart. وَلَا تُخْزِنِي يَوْمَ يُبْعَثُونَ يَوْمَ لَا يَنْفَعُ مَالٌ وَلَا بَنُونَ إِلَّا مَنْ أَتَى اللَّهَ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. Do not disgrace me on the day that they will be resurrected, the day when neither wealth nor children will avail. Accept him who comes to Allah with a sound heart. And Ibrahim alayhi salam, the father of the religions, is described as someone who has a pure sound heart. وَإِنَّ مِن شِيَعَتِهِ لَإِبْرَاهِيمِ إِذْ جَاءَ رَبَّهُ بِقَلْبٍ سَلِيمٍ. So, the pure heart and the sound heart is the only thing that is beneficial on the day of resurrection. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z. In Nahjul Balagha, there's a very beautiful narration from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Ala wa inna min al-bala al-faqa. Beware that destitution is a calamity, but worse than destitution is ailment of the body. And we all know that what the meaning of ailment of the body is. But Imam Ali continues, while worse than bodily ailment is the disease of the heart. It's worse than ailment of the body. What? The ailment that we have in our heart. Beware that plenty of wealth is a blessing, but better than plenty of wealth is the health of the body, while still better than the health of the body is the chastity of heart. Here, in this case, the concept of medicine is very important. Imam Ali, while describing the pious people, said, أَمَّا اللَّيْلِ فَصَافُونَ أَقْدَامَهُمْ. And he continues, يُحَزَّنُونَ بِهِ أَنفُسَهُمْ وَيَسْتَثِيرُونَ بِهِ دَوَاءَهُمْ. Pious people are those who stand up and recite the Quran at night. And then he said, pious people try to take from the Quran the treatment as medicine for their illness. Look at the spirituality as a medicine. This is the point. Take the Quran and riwayat as a medicine for purifying your heart. And when we reflect on the Holy Quran, we can see that those who don't answer to Allah's and His Apostles' summons, they are blind, deaf, they are dead. إِنَّكَ لَا تُسْمَعُ الْمَوْتَى وَلَا تُسْمَعُ الصُّمَّ الدُّعَاءَ إِذَا وَلَّوْ مُدْبِرِينَ وَمَا أَنْتَ بِهَادِ الْعُمْيِ عَنْ ضَلَالَتِهِمْ إِنْ تُسْمَعُ إِلَّا مَنْ يُؤْمِنُ بِآيَاتِنَا فَهُمْ مُسْلِمُونَ. You cannot make the dead hear, nor can you make the deaf listen to your call when they turn their backs, nor can you lead the blind out of their error. You can make only those hear, you who believe in our signs and have submitted. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z on IRIB English Radio. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another listen, fi amanillah and God bless you.
From the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.